Today's audiocast for Monday, May 29th, Memorial Day, is made possible by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News Service. It's not often a proposed airworthiness directive is less onerous than a company service bulletin, but that's exactly what's happening with the FAA's latest proposed rule on Lycoming crankshafts. But unless Lycoming changes its mandatory service bulletin regarding almost 4,000 360 and 540 series engines, some owners could be faced with an expensive choice in February of 2009. That's when Lycoming will end a special deal for customers whose engines fall under the service bulletin. The company says it will provide all the parts needed to change out the affected cranks for $2,000, considerably less than the regular price of $16,000. That deal expires February 21, 2009, but the FAA says the cranks should be safe for up to 12 years after the engine's date of manufacture, and the new AD won't require crankshaft replacement on engines that haven't reached TBO until after the 12 years are up. So if you're the owner of a relatively low-time engine that's less than 12 years old in February of 2009, you must tear down the engine and replace the crankshaft to get in on the $2,000 offer. Then you'll have to do it all over again in a few years when the engine's time is up. AOPA is calling on Lycoming to change its service bulletin to match the language of the Airworthiness Directive and save its customers considerable time and money. While most federal agencies would love a little extra cash from the coming 2007 budget, it looks like it'll take an act of Congress to get the FAA to accept a $1.4 billion increase in its budget. Earlier this year, the Bush administration asked for $13.8 billion to keep every pilot's favorite bureaucracy going for another year. The trouble is, that figure chopped a $950 million hole in the airport improvement program and could have left 2,500 airports without any federal money at all for runway lighting and equipment repairs. Last Thursday, the House Transportation and Treasury Subcommittee passed a bill that would restore that funding and then some, pushing the total FAA budget to $15.2 billion. Although it still has to pass through the full Congress, the recommendation is sure to please aviation groups who've been fighting the cuts and local airport authorities who rely on federal funding to maintain and expand their aviation facilities. There's some indication AOPA is making some headway in its political battle to prevent the introduction of user fees by the FAA. A congressman from California says he'll fight user fees. Representative Daryl Issa, a pilot himself, told an AOPA town hall meeting in San Diego last week via video presentation that he won't support the FAA initiative. And it appears that business aviation may be the real target of user fees. Gerald Arpe, CEO of American Airlines, said cash-strapped airlines are subsidizing other industries by shouldering most of the cost for air traffic control, while business aircraft don't pay their fair share. Arpe told the Executives Club of Chicago that airlines pay 90% of the cost of the air traffic control system, but only account for two-thirds of the traffic. Business aircraft, on the other hand, make up 19% of the traffic, but only pay 5% of the cost, according to Arpe. National Business Aviation Association President Ed Bolin says the math isn't that simple. He says the big cost for air traffic control results from the high concentrations of flights around airline hubs. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has ruled that aviation fuel is not a motor vehicle fuel, and that means suppliers of Avgas and Jet A are free to lose as much money as they want on its sale. Last week, the court ruled that aviation fuels are not affected by the state's Unfair Sales Act, which requires automotive fuel sales to include at least 9% profit. The law is aimed at preventing big fuel companies from putting little guys out of business by relentlessly undercutting them. The recent ruling resulted from a complaint by Orion Flight Services at Oshkosh's Whitman Field that its competitor, Basler Flight Services, was selling fuel for below cost. The price war began in 2002 and lasted until early 2003, and pilots were the clear winners. At one point, fuel prices on the field fell to $1.59 a gallon, a dollar less than the normal price. As the FAA puts final touches on a rule that may require installation of equipment to prevent fuel tank explosions in airliners, a Boeing 727 on the ramp in India blew up last week when vapors ignited in a wing tank. Fortunately, no one was hurt. The FAA rule would set flammability standards for the vacant space between fuel tanks, and the only way to meet those standards will be to install gear that pumps inert gas into the tanks to displace the oxygen. Ironically, in Devon's demise. The rule will only apply to fuselage tanks, and the 727 carries all of its fuel in the wings. Including the Indian incident, there have been 18 documented cases of fuel tank explosions in airliners. The most serious was the destruction of TWA Flight 800, a Boeing 747 off Long Island 10 years ago. Dropping in on your well-heeled neighbors in the exclusive neighborhoods of Scottsdale, Arizona, could soon be against the law. Scottsdale's Planning Commission is considering an ordinance that would specifically ban helicopters from landing on private property in residential areas. Local residents say the law isn't necessary because helicopter landings rarely happen in the neighborhood, and the ordinance will stop one visitor from making his yearly stop. Apparently, Santa arrives in Scottsdale by helicopter, and if the new law comes into effect, residents will have to hop in their Mercedes and see him at the mall like everybody else. And the flying community around Salt Lake City would prefer a local showman take his act somewhere else. Super Dale Sconcy is a well-known local character who owns a chain of businesses called Totally Awesome. What local pilots are finding less than totally awesome is Super Dale's penchant for attracting attention in his powered paraglider. Police fielded numerous calls last Wednesday after a paraglider, later identified as Super Dale's, was spotted flying at a low altitude adjacent to a busy freeway. Super Dale insists he did nothing wrong and was flying over an open field. Authorities are deciding whether he broke any rules or regulations on the flight, and in the meantime, other paragliding pilots and ultralight operators are speaking out, saying Super Dale's actions give them all a bad name. And could the MIT pedigree behind the latest attempt at a flying car mean this one could really fly? Carl Dietrich, an MIT student who's designed a rotable plane with folding wings that falls under the light sport aircraft limitation, says people are lining up to buy, sell, and invest in his creation. The aircraft, called the Transition, is designed to be able to drive to the airport, then spread its wings and take off. So far, only a mock-up has been built, and Dietrich plans to show it off at EAA AirVenture this coming July. AvWeb would like to take this opportunity to salute all of our brave servicemen and women fighting overseas and pay a special tribute to those who have paid the ultimate price this Memorial Day weekend. God bless the USA. For more in-depth coverage on these and other stories and great features like Don Brown's new Say It Again column, The Pilot's Lounge with Rick Durden, The Picture of the Week, and details on how to receive the twice-monthly business AvFlash newsletter in your inbox for free, just visit avweb.com. Today's report was written by Russ Niles and brought to you by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Look for AvWeb's next audiocast on Friday, June 2nd, when we'll feature AvWeb's Mary Grady in a conversation with Jim Bass, the new CEO of New Piper. This is Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks a lot for downloading us.